From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of October 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, as we close out our time together. Matt Bennett will be here from Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to check things down on the farm and the cash grain situation. We'll check in on the weather forecast and hear all about the things that are happening in Washington, D.C., as it relates to the RFS and farm taxes as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, now joins us to take a look at the agricultural marketplace. Dan, thanks for being with us. Tell me where we stand technically in your opinion.
Well, I think probably corn is the most interesting maybe for a potential rally. I don't know with the size of the crop that we have out there how much juice we can really get going in this market. But even though we're down a little bit here today, a lot of it will depend upon how we close out the week. But we are in position to have a weekly reversal to the upside if we can kind of hold steady tomorrow or maybe just lose a little bit. I think we would be in pretty good shape for this sideways market to basically continue. We've been down in the lower 340s a couple times here. We've bounced off of those levels. So I do think the market is trying to carve out here like a 340, 360 trading range to get a pop above 360. We're probably going to have something new come into the marketplace. I do know that corn sales were awfully good this morning on the export front, but when you look at them compared to last year's pace and the pace that that's needed. To meet USDA's projection, we are well behind those numbers. So, but if we would get several weeks of these kind of sales, then maybe we could maybe get caught up. But otherwise, we still got a lot of harvest of corn to go through yet. I assume everything's going to find a home. So I do think this, 340 to 360 trading range is going to maybe be the spot that we're going to be holding pattern, waiting for something new to come along. When you go over and look at the soybean chart, I think the last time I talked to you, which was 2 weeks ago, that November soybean futures chart was bumping right up against that 62% retracement level of the summer decline. And that was right at that $9.99 to $10 level. Soybeans did find resistance at that level. And basically, since that point, we've been in a sideways to lower type trend for the last couple of weeks. And today's action implies that we probably got more weakness coming. It seems like the weather guys at least have enough rain in the forecast for South America that the trade feels that the weather conditions in South America are at least improving. And we still have a few beans to harvest. We're not all the way home yet on beans, and we may be beginning some, last-minute harvest pressure kind of set to take hold here in the soybean complex.
When you think about this marketplace as it relates to the amount of grain, both corn and soybeans, that we have on hand, that it appears that we'll have by the time we get to the end of next year, is there much hope, if things go well in South America, for these prices to rally very much at all? And what's kind of the top end side of it?
Well, it's all about production, production, production. And then basically production is derived from weather. If South America has a good crop and then we come back and have a generally favorable weather growing season for next year, it's going to be very difficult to get these markets to do anything on the upside because we'll continue to build stocks. The incentives to bring acreage into production during the double O's when we had the $8 corn and the $16, $17, $18 soybeans, the world did that. It brought more acres into production, and now we're on the downside of it. We're 10 years away from those high prices, and now the function of the market here is basically to try to discourage production. When you look at the U.S. acreage levels, I guess I don't see any kind of drop in acreage that's going to be meaningful. I do think that probably with the bean prices having held better than the corn prices, farmers may have a tendency to try to increase bean acres this next coming year. But that will probably, prices will probably determine that maybe come spring. But nobody's making any money basically in the wheat market. Nobody's making any money in the corn market unless you're getting the super yields. Now, I have heard some super yields, 280 bushel corn. I suppose you might be able to make some money at $3 corn at 280, but you're not making any money at 230, 240 at $3. So it just looks to me that we're waiting around for a weather pattern to take place that would shrink up world supply somewhere around the world. Now, I'm one that looks at the odds and the statistics, and 12 was the last major drought that we've had in the United States, and the further we get away from 12, the more likely it is that we will have another dry type growing season. Whether it's going to be 18, I don't know. It could be 19, but statistically says that we are going to run into some kind of weather problem as we get into 18, 19. And there for a while, it looked like it was going to be 17, but that was it kind of flopped. And the weather pattern turned out quite favorably, at least based upon the yields that we're hearing that farmers are bringing in out of the combine here this fall.
In less volatile marketing years like this one, where there is a large supply both domestically and on the global front, are there things that producers should consider differently in the way they go about marketing either corn or soybeans?
Well, when you're in a sideways market, the only thing that you can do is try to capture the carrying charges in the marketplace, because that's how elevators make their money. Elevators will buy the grain from the farmer, they'll put the hedge on, and then they'll keep rolling that hedge forward, and they earn carrying charges for that bushel of grain. Now, farmers might look at doing some of that. They could maybe take a look at putting some floors underneath the market with these carrying charges out in the distance, and then maybe be in position to take advantage of maybe a spring weather scare or a weather problem out of South America. But there's just not a lot of fancy footwork you can really do in a sideways market but sit there and earn carrying charges when you're in a sideways market. That's what it looks like corn is in, kind of like a 340, 360. But if South America would come in with a super big crop and our exports down the road doesn't look like they're going to meet USDA's projections, then there's probably downside price risk in corn another 20 cents. We maybe slip back to the 340, 360 level, 320, 340 level. That's the risk I see in corn if we don't have a steady diet of some big corn export numbers. And that same way with soybeans. We need to see a steady run of some very strong weekly export sales numbers or otherwise the soybean market is going to slip lower on us. That's just the way it's going to be. So there's risk in this market, but it's, you know, it's not going to be a volatile risk. It'll be a very calm, slow grind to the downside. But it's too early, I think, to think that we're going to have a major decline in the market based upon our export demand. But if we once we turn the first part of the year, and if South America has a big size crop and our exports begin to hurt, then you'll struggle. Prices will probably struggle as we go into spring, unless we have some kind of weather problem here in the United States.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Don't forget to visit our website and purchase your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's the 21st day of November in Normal. The cost is just $30 at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. In today's agricultural news, after 2 days of tense debate, the House Judiciary Committee decided to advance out of committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte's bill to overhaul the agricultural guest worker program. The committee voted 17-16 on the bill. 14 Democrats and 2 Republicans voted against the bill, as 5 other Republicans abstained in a markup that some attendees said was a much closer call than expected. Groups including the American Farm Bureau Federation and National Cattlemen's Beef Association view it as one way to address labor shortages. The bill would move the temporary visa program from the Labor Department to USDA. It would also allow agricultural employers with year-round work, namely dairy farmers, meat processors, and loggers, to apply. The next step will be getting the bill to the House floor. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where yesterday Republican Senators Ted Cruz and Mike Lee put on hold the nomination of Bill Northey to a senior USDA post. Northey's name had moved out of the Senate Agriculture Committee by voice vote, but multiple sources in the refining industry say the holdup was a reaction to the way Iowa Republican Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley aggressively pressured the EPA into protecting renewable fuel standard volume requirements, which help biofuels like ethanol. It's about time someone stood up to the kind of extortion we have seen coming from some of the Midwestern senators when the RFS is at issue, said one refining industry source. Blocking North has some extra sting, of course, for Grassley, because his grandson, Iowa State Representative Pat Grassley, is a candidate to replace Northey as Iowa Agriculture Secretary. Let's stay in that related area, or with the RFS. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has sent a letter to President Donald Trump seeking a waiver for his state from the renewable fuel standard. The Democrats sent Trump the letter last Friday, just as the administration was announcing it would direct the Environmental Protection Agency to abandon proposals that Midwest senators said would weaken the RFS. Wolf wrote to Trump saying the merchant refiners of the Northeast are not able to acquire enough RIN credits, or RIN, to meet the RFS obligations because they have limited blending capacity. Because of that, Wolf said the refiners must purchase RINs on the secondary market, where prices have increased significantly. If those refiners close, Wolf alleges that refiners in the U.S. Gulf would have to increase capacity, and the move would lead to price spikes. However, Renewable Fuels Association president and CEO Bob Dineen said that studies have shown merchant refiners recover the cost of RINs at the wholesale level. Also, he says there's been little evidence that RIN credit prices affect prices at the pump. One more news item from Washington, D.C. Legislation that would make it easier for family farmers to reorganize debts when facing bankruptcy received final approval this week, sending the measure to the president's desk for signature. The Family Farmer Bankruptcy Clarification Act of 2017 is sponsored by Senate Republican Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Democrat Al Franken of Minnesota. Franken said the bill is a common-sense fix to ensure that the law functions as intended and that the bill would protect family farmers across the nation. And finally today, farmers in the United States have been planting more and more acres of soybeans. There's a simple reason behind this increase. Soybeans have been more profitable than other crops over the last several years. The question now is, how many acres will they plant next year? University of Illinois commodity market specialist Todd Hubbs has been thinking about that one, and he decided to determine how many acres are needed if the stocks-to-use ratio was to stay at about 7%. Hubbs says that number should provide a $9.50 season's average cash price.
If we assume 7% stocks-to-use in 18-19 would give us $9.50, which would cover our cost of production here in Illinois based on current projections. You know, how many acres of soybeans nationally under those strong assumptions would we need given a trend yield? You know, based on a trend yield of about 46.8, which, you know, the last few years of soybean yields, it's probably going to be higher than that in 2018. But we would need about, you know, 88.4 million harvested acres to give us 950 based on a 7% stocks to use.
If you use USDA's long-term trendline yield for next year, 48.4 bushels to the acre, then the harvested acreage number must drop to about 85.4 million in order to get to the 950 season's average cash price. That's 86.2 million acres planted to soybeans in the United States next spring. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, a key GOP tax reform break for unincorporated farming operations is under attack, but likely to be changed to answer Democratic critics. Well, many Democrats charge the creation of a new lower pass-through tax rate of 25% for unincorporated businesses that file as individuals, which most small farms do, allows for abuses. It's a claim that GOP tax writers and farm groups have their eye on as House lawmakers get ready to introduce their tax bill next week, says American Farm Bureau Federation tax advisor Pat Wolf.
Those that criticize this proposal say that people will change how their businesses are organized to take advantage of the lower rate. So, for example, people will start forming non-incorporated businesses in instances where it wasn't a business before. They'll create a new business to get that 25% pass-through rate.
Or, Wolf says, pass-through businesses might incorporate to get the new, even lower 20% corporate tax rate. She says Republicans are in talks on how to prevent such a shifting.
The real question is, how are they going to make a pass-through business divide up their profit? How much of that business's profit will be at the 25% business rate, and how much of it will be taxed at the individual rate that tops out at 35%?
Senate Finance Member and former Chairman Chuck Grassley argues there needs to be a built-in differential, say 70% of income taxed at the 25% business rate, the rest at the 35% personal income rate. How that balance is set could help dissuade many from simply changing their business structure to take advantage of a tax change likely to have a huge impact on agriculture's bottom line. Let's turn our attention now to what's been happening in the cash grain market. Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, is here to talk about that marketplace. Matt, I take it you finished up and you've been doing a bit of fall field work. Have things been pretty mellow there?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, we were able to get done there last week towards the end of the week. Got a fair amount of groundwork to go yet, but we got some done as well. So it's been kind of quiet at this point. You know, a lot of producers trying to find a home for those last bushels. Obviously, a lot of corn on the ground in our part of the world, and so it's been interesting to see just kind of how that's all transpired. Basis hasn't exactly been fantastic, but it hadn't fell apart near as much as what we thought it might as well. So
that's probably a good sign. How do exports hold up?
Exports awfully good today. You know, better than what some may have thought. You know, soybeans and corn were above most people's expectations. So, you know, when we look at that kind of those export numbers, I think it kind of lent a little bit of support to where the corn market was able to hold itself together. Obviously, beans fell just a little bit, but, you know, it's a tough time of year to rally at the same time. So, we definitely need a steady dose of bullish information that we may not be necessarily expecting if we're going to be able to hold these markets, without going to the path of least resistance, which seems to be low at this point.
And what are you thinking about for soybeans?
Well, I think whenever you look at the bean market, it's definitely a tough call. There's a lot of different things going on, in my opinion, with beans. If South American weather is going to be good, then we don't have that bullish influence. It's tough to figure out the beans. I don't want to try to be bullish or bearish, either one as a producer. I just need to simply look at my bottom line. And most of the producers in our part of the world certainly had really good bean yields. I know some of the later yields fell off just a little bit. For the most part, when you look at these yields, even at, $9.40, $9.50 beans, that's a pretty good price for beans. I just have a hard time not doing something with those. And if a person wants to get long beans later on, they still can. But you can certainly make a lot of money at 9.5 beans.
Yeah, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
And of course, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, he will be one of the panelists at the Farm Assets Conference. There'll be 7 of them to talk about the commodity markets. We'll also take up a whole bunch of other things, including the Farm Bill and how conservation practices marry into the economics of your farm. Should be an interesting discussion with Gary Schnittke and some others about the economics of no-till and conservation practices like cover crops. You'll want to be there. You can do that right now by buying your ticket at farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. The Farm Assets Conference is in Normal, Illinois, an all-day event on Tuesday, the 21st day. We start at about 10:30 a.m. I'm Todd Gleason.